Hello, and welcome to the Cannabis Corner. I am your host, Joshua Braff, and my partner here is farmer Adam Teitelbaum from Fort Collins, Colorado, where he has been growing since 2005, and finding extremely innovative ways to make medicine from some of the lessons he's had from mentors and also an incredible amount of new knowledge that's popped up in the last few years, in which so many different people with different types of ailments are using cannabis in different ways. There's probably no American that hasn't seen that it's been talked about on the news in different ways than it has recently. Dr. Sanjay Gupta came out with an apology first saying, "I had no idea that this particular herb or weed had so many properties that should be looked at in a very, very important way. We are a country that is perhaps over-medicated, over-prescribed, and we need to definitely take a look at this product that has been around for centuries and centuries and certainly put in the doghouse, as we all know. In 2008, I began to shoot a documentary with farmer Adam Teitelbaum, a close friend. And at the time, it was completely illegal. There was no sense that there would ever be an open forum for discussion, and certainly not an open forum to have it prescribed. So here we are, less than 10 years later, and as we were shooting and learning, we couldn't believe how the law was changing and how we were learning that certain ailments were being rectified or lessened by certain kinds of intake of cannabis. So what a new world it is, and we are here to discuss it in an effort to educate, because the questions that are coming in from Americans about how it might affect them, how it might make their medicinal intake or their chemical pill intake lessened. You've got people who have trouble sleeping all over this country, and their doctors are prescribing a chemical drug. Ambien is a household name. So you see why we're here. I'm here with two pure experts in an industry that is finding its way to the American household and perhaps worldwide. And so today's topic we are going to be in discussion is about what a CBD is and what THC is. And we are also going to talk about what CBNs are and CBGs. So I'm going to ask Dr. Patel to begin, and Farmer Adam Teitelbaum can jump in anytime he wants. Let's begin with what a CBD is as compared to THC. Many of us know that THC is the compound in cannabis that makes you feel silly, perhaps relaxed, maybe even a little paranoid at times if you're new to it. So THC and its difference to CBDs. Dr. Patel, can you weigh in on that?
Sure. So overall, big picture, the marijuana plant makes THC and CBD in high concentrations. It does make a lot of other chemicals called cannabinoids, but these two it mainly makes in high concentrations. And the fundamental difference in terms of the impact that it has on a human, like Josh mentioned, is that THC is a psychoactive compound, causes a high. CBD is not psychoactive, doesn't cause any sort of high, okay? But they both have medical value, both individually and when used together. And the combinations will vary based on the medical condition that you have in terms of the combinations that you know, one should be using.
I see. Adam, how would you say in your caregiving and your tons of experience with patients, how has the CBD part of the compound come into play lately for you with the people that you're in contact with? In other words, are there people in Fort Collins where it's very, very widely used and there's hardly a stigma anymore? Are people looking for straight CBDs?
Yeah, people are looking for straight CBDs, but it really has to do with also the ratio of CBDs to THC. And it's not that you want to necessarily isolate and just have CBDs, because when you do that, you lose what's called the entourage effect, which is all of these cannabinoids working together. So yeah, in some cases, depending on your ailment, it could be that something that's CBD only may be very helpful. But for others, it may be that you want to have a little THC in there. And it may not even get you, you know, quote unquote high, but the cannabinoids work in concert together. So, but yes, I mean, right now I'm actually testing out a number of different CBD strains and waiting for some testing results just for specific patients who've asked for these things. And it becomes like pure medicine.
Pure medicine in the CBD, and I think a lot of – well, we're hearing $20 billion in revenue in the industry in 2020. Makes me think that there are some people who are using it and not telling their neighbor because of the – just the famous stigma lumped with, let's say, heroin and cocaine for so many years, sort of in the doghouse. You know, only Cheech and Chong can really give us the appropriate look at what one looks like while they're under the influence. But the CBD part of this and it becoming a medicine is quite amazing. Dr. Patel, how are you seeing or hearing about CBDs and their effect on more serious illnesses like Crohn's and Parkinson's?
Sure. So main category of conditions that I find CBD helpful for are patients that have conditions associated with spasms. CBD has large antispasmodic properties. So anybody that has any sort of like cramping of your intestines, which is the case in IBS and ulcerative colitis, for instance, it helps with that. Anybody who comes in with back pain, it can help with that as well. So that's the general category that it helps with. It does have also anti-inflammatory properties. So it also helps with a lot of autoimmune conditions like psoriasis, like rheumatoid arthritis as well, in terms of helping to reduce inflammation. So those are the two main general categories that I've found that CBD tends to help with.
Right. And there's something to be said for the compound as far as nausea. So many ailments that we have as Americans involve nausea, and it's debilitating. And what's this about patients under chemotherapy getting relief as far as appetite's concerned?
So it's actually not CBD that's helping to relieve nausea and vomiting or stimulating appetite. The thing that's doing that is the THC, actually.
Okay.
So like I said before, it really depends on your medical condition in terms of what's going to benefit you more. More THC, more CBD, or sometimes you even equal amounts, varying amounts of it. Specifically speaking to patients with cancer, right? So they're undergoing chemo. They tend to experience nausea, vomiting. They have poor appetite, causes significant weight loss. So that's definitely the one area that it helps with significantly. It helps to reduce the nausea, reduce episodes of vomiting, helps to stimulate their appetite. We don't have a lot of pharmaceuticals out there that help to stimulate appetite the way that marijuana does. And it's very, very beneficial, as you can imagine, especially in patients that have cancer, because the cancer itself is eating away at your body. And then on top of that, you throw on the chemo and they're all of a sudden, you know, losing like 10, 20 pounds over a very short period of time.
Right.
Making them weak.
Crohn's disease is another one that comes up a great deal. Tell me how you would recommend someone with Crohn's.
Depends on what symptoms they're having. Okay, so if they come in and they're saying that they're having mainly abdominal pain, then I would recommend something with high amounts of CBD. Okay, but if they're telling me that what I'm more suffering from is nausea and vomiting, then I'd recommend something with higher amounts of THC.
I see.
So it's more symptom relief, but it depends on also on what symptom you have.
Adam, you've grown specifically for certain patients. When we were shooting our documentary, you brought me into a home, multiple homes, where there was a hospital bed in the living room and a very, very ill person in that bed, usually with a caregiver nearby. You would approach those people and say, I have a strain that we know has worked for you before, and here it is. And the person's face would always light up, indicating the relief that they were about to have. This was sort of profound for me in that I was coming to shoot a documentary about how Fort Collins was so accepting of cannabis as medicine. And here you were with eye contact with these very ill people. Do you remember them specifically saying, this is what's bothering me? And can you speak to how you matched the strain you grew for that patient?
Yeah. I mean, well, we kept a journal. We still have it, a log of strains and what symptoms people were telling us they were or were not relieving. And ourselves were using it medically as well. So we had our own data and we just, you know, amass this data, and then it would be going to patients and saying, what are your symptoms? You know, if it's nausea, is it pain? Were they suffering from MS? I've helped a guy with Crohn's disease for years now. So, yeah, I mean, we just kept the data and then matched that up and used just the real results of what people were telling us. Very often, I would get a phone call saying, you know, this strain did nothing for me. So I would go back, I would pick it up and take it and bring something else. So a lot of it was trial and error, but now because of the wider usage and dispensaries and websites and, you know, easy ways to find things and find information, now it's easier for somebody to simply go online and look or speak to a physician or somebody else who has that condition to find out what's working for them. And, you know, don't forget, it's not just smoking. It could be a cream. It could be a tincture. It could be an edible.
So that's interesting. I remember so well you being so good at matching up certain strains for certain people. And I think that that's probably news to a lot of Americans, that you're growing a plant that is going to have so many possibilities for specific patients. We're talking about elderly people. We're talking about children. And so it's impossible not to look at this as a possibility for medicating someone in a safer way and perhaps even a cheaper way. But today we're talking about the medicinal qualities that are so important. And we have mentioned Crohn's and we've mentioned Parkinson's. On Parkinson's, everyone knows that kind of shaking that occurs, the tremors, the notion that cannabis, of all things, cuts down on that substantially, must be addressed. Dr. Patel, have you seen any patients with Parkinson's?
Yeah. A good number of them, actually. And again, as I mentioned, CBD has antispasmodic properties. So that's why it helps the tremors. It helps to cut down on those muscles twitching and tremoring. So that's the one symptom that I've found that marijuana helps with Parkinson's.
Chemically, the medicines that they would use and have been using for years, because marijuana hasn't been an option, apparently isn't having as much effect.
No. What these medications do is that they alter the amount of dopamine released in the body. And so you have to be very nuanced about how much the patient is getting, because otherwise you tend to get, you know, all sorts of gnarly side effects from these medications. Yeah.
I think that's one of the most important things, is that side effects pop up in horrible ways for people. And if the person finds the right strain for them and the right way to ingest it, avoiding side effects is a very big deal for people looking for relief through medicines. Let's talk about CBGs and CBN.
So first of all, let's start with what is CBN.
Okay.
CBN is a breakdown product of THC, right? So as the plant ages, the THC starts to break down into CBN. One of the effects that I've seen of CBN clinically is that it helps patients that have severe insomnia. It makes them really, really drowsy, even more so than CBD, for instance. Okay. The other interesting thing about CBN is that it helps to age the plant. So you know, based on the amount of CBN that's in there, how old the plant is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, and your thought is for sleep deprivation right off the bat, which has to be one of the major bullet points in numbers of people who are reaching out for help other than chemicals. And CBG, can you speak to that?
Sure. So CBG is what you start with in the plant. It's actually CBGA, which is the acid form of CBG. Now, every plant makes different amounts of different enzymes that then turn, so you have THC synthase, you have CBD synthase. These enzymes then alter the CBG to make CBD and THC. So the plant genetics, depending on, you know, how much CBD synthase it makes, how much THC synthase it makes, that will then influence ultimately how much THC and how much CBD it will make. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. But it's also important to address that you can see why this is confusing for people.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to just be, let's take this brown weed to the Pink Floyd show so that the lights and the sound become better. We get our money's worth. And here we're talking about literally the relief of some of the major diseases that affect us. Okay, my last question for this area is about epilepsy. And again, here we are in a population that is dealing in large numbers. And wow, the research on cannabis and epilepsy. I will talk to you, Adam. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. That research and all of the success that's happened, especially with kids, is something that has caused this mass migration to Colorado.
Huh.
We have a flood of families. This isn't, you know, hippie stoners looking to come to Colorado for weed. These are families coming to look to stop their kids, you know, grand mal and petite seizures. And we've seen it. I mean, there's a famous strain in Colorado called Charlotte's Web, and it was named after this little girl, Charlotte, and her parents were looking for some solution to stop their daughter's seizures and have her have a normal life. And it was this high, rich CBD plant it's really a hemp plant that has turned around her life and many others. There's also an example of a 17-year-old girl who had this condition as well, had never spoken a word. And after 2 days of CBD tincture treatment at 15 milligrams a day, she stopped having seizures, both the petite grand mals and the grand mals. So shows right there what an incredible component of cannabis or hemp CBD is. Well, you know, there's also a 17-year-old girl. Is it called Dravet syndrome, who had that and had never spoken a word in her 17 years. And after 2 days of 15 milligrams of CBD tincture a day, after 2 days, she went from having multiple seizures to zero, and within a year learning to speak, and she got to know herself, her parents got to know her, and this was because of the cannabis plant. So, I mean, some miraculous things.
I remember being in your home and people were coming and saying, yes, we moved here.
Yes.
Just the damaging aspects of a stigma for someone who realizes they're getting relief, but is going to leave their community to go to a Colorado that's accepting.
Well, listen, and now that's more important than ever because CBDs had been legal nationwide. And now the DEA just recently turned the tide on this and said, no, this is a Schedule I substance. This is insanity. So now people who were able to get some relief from this, from CBD strains, which, you know, had to qualify as hemp, which has to have below 0.3% of THC so that it's, you know, not getting you high. And now we're back to square one on that. And now you need to be in a legal state in order to get this. I mean, heck, we feed our dogs CBD treats.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, wow. Colorado is definitely the front runner, and certainly Washington. And now with the new vote, there's many states on board. I think one of the reasons we're here is that there are more states than not that still will categorize it as a drug like cocaine or like heroin or OxyContin or some of these pills that have found their way into the zeitgeist. And so we want to say to the people who, let's say, have Parkinson's and are feeling tremors and it's illegal for them to get a medicine that may be best for them, that the tide is changing and we're happy for anyone who's open to this and can see past the stereotypical, you know, way one looks at a stoner or a Cheech or a Chong. We're pretty serious people, and we've got a physician here who's saying she's seeing major, major differences in just using this weed that has so many amazing properties. Okay, we are now going to take a caller. Hey, we have our caller. Her name is Sydney, and she's from Pueblo, Colorado. What's your question, Sydney?
Yeah, hi. I have a 15-year-old son, and he actually approached me curious about smoking marijuana. His friends, some have tried it, and so he's just curious about it. My concern is that, you know, he's young, he's only 15, and I worry about the effects on his brain and just him not being fully grown. So I'm not sure how to talk to him about it and explain maybe when to wait till or what the best thing is when it comes to children and smoking marijuana.
Such a good question, and I'm sure many, many people are also thinking about this as it's hard to not see cannabis coming. New York Times and the Today Show and you name it. So the question for a 15-year-old might be, why not? Dr. Patel, 15-year-old's brain is not finished growing, as it were. What do you say to that?
So I can speak to this from two different angles. One is research. The second is I have actually treated patients that are below the age of 18 and what I've seen in them long-term clinically. So let me talk about the research first. So there was a study done where they looked at the brains of teenagers that had been using marijuana on a daily basis for at least 3 months, 2 to 3 months. And they then took an image of their brains using an MRI And they found that there were no changes in size or in shape of the brains of these teenagers, okay? Obviously, we do need more research because it was only about 100 teenagers' brains that they looked at. We'd need to look at a lot more brains of teenagers to say conclusively that, yes, it doesn't impact the size or the shape of their brains. Now, the other thing is that, like I mentioned, I have treated patients below the age of 18. And I'm now going on to treat them for several years. And clinically, I haven't found anything in terms of their behavior, in terms of their, academic performance, being disturbed in any way.
How about gateway drug, meaning marijuana is great, but I'm going to move on to something more severe because I can. What are your thoughts? Have you seen any of that?
So let me speak to this from the research perspective. Okay. So what they found is that before teenagers even touch marijuana, they turn to alcohol and tobacco first. So it is one of the first drugs that they use, but not the gateway drug that everybody calls marijuana to be.
What about, do pharmaceuticals, pills fall in there somewhere as well?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I have seen, when I was working in the emergency room, I'm a former ER doctor, I saw a 10-year-old that had overdosed on his dad's OxyContins. And it's not unusual nowadays to hear about teenagers having pill parties. They're taking their parents' pills, throwing them in a bowl, and then just having whatever. The other interesting thing is that marijuana is not widely used in Japan, but there is still high cocaine use, right? So a lot of times they try to correlate, well, if the marijuana use is high, they're going to turn to other hardcore drugs next. Not necessarily the case, that even though marijuana is not available, people are still using cocaine in high amounts. Now, the opposite is true in areas like Amsterdam, where marijuana is widely available, but they're actually seeing less use of hardcore drugs. So there really isn't much of a correlation with one or the other. I'd say it's a myth, and I'd say the more concerning substances are alcohol and tobacco.
So does Sydney need to be concerned about her son's use or possible future use?
What would you say to Sydney?
Okay, so here's the thing. When it comes to teenagers, they do tend to abuse whatever they're using. And my whole thing is that if you're going to use something as a medication, use it safely. So that would be my concern with a teenager. But I'm not a parent, so I'll leave it to you guys in the room that are parents as to how to approach this.
That's a good point. We are two dads that chose to put alcohol on the back burner. We found we were better listeners, better parents, and allowed cannabis to come into our lives and be around the kids. The big question is, what do you mean around the kids? Are you smoking into their faces like they're cats? Or are you going outside? Are you being respectful? What about their friends? So these are big things that come up in the American family, and we're hearing a lot of questions about it. Thank you for this great question, because it's led to some interesting talk. I want to thank you, and we're going to discuss one more thing about the teen, and that is how being a dad of a teen in this day and age is set up for that. I would say, for personally in my life, my teens know that I'm not a drinker and that I do disappear here and there to ingest in my own way. Adam, how do you speak to that?
I have three teenagers, one's in college, and we've been open about our usage of it with them since they were very young. I'd say probably, I think, 2006, so about 11 years ago is when we first brought it out. And we tend to medicate in our room. But yes, as the kids have gotten older, it may be that they're next door in the living room and we're sitting at the dining room table and we're partaking and medicating there. And it's as normal as anything, as drinking a glass of water, or if, I were a beer drinker and I were sitting there drinking a beer. And there's really no stigma attached to it. If anything, it's made it so that it's not such a big deal.
Yeah, I think the notion that the family might be evolving past alcohol, and what research has shown alcohol can do to a family, I mean.
Well, as a matter of fact, I know many people who have used cannabis to combat alcoholism and beat it.
Right. So people are saying, you know what, I don't like waking up with a hangover. Perhaps this will be better for me. I always remember JFK Jr. before he passed away, he had said, you know what, I don't drink wine at night. I just take a couple of puffs of this. And I was seeing what the backlash might be because he said it probably in 1995 or earlier. And the truth was he was finding a very peaceful evening without wine, without alcohol, and even amongst his friends that long ago. Well, thank you very much, Sydney.
Yes, thank you. Very helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you again for calling in the Cannabis Corner. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. The all-in-one smoking kit on the go, AlphaCat, the recognized standard. Alpha Puff Kit has everything for a perfect smoking experience. Turbo Torch lighter, papers, filters, a grinder, and storage for all your needs, all in a medical-grade plastic water pipe. Get yours at www.alphapuff.com. Hey, we're back on the Cannabis Corner, and I am here with Zach Braff, actor Zach Braff, who happens to be my brother. Hello, Zach.
Hi, brother. Good morning.
It's so nice to talk to you, except this time we're talking with an audience, and I wanted to thank you for saying yes so easily to the Cannabis Corner. Not everybody's running to connect themselves to something that, to a lot of Americans, is, you know, an illegal entity. But I know you, and I know that you are aware of the evolution of cannabis as medicine, and you know that I spent a great deal of time in Colorado and researching and find myself here, you know, with a voice able to say this is something that should be looked at differently than it has in the past. And I wanted to first say to you a thank you, because somewhere along the line, maybe it was living in L.A. or you know, becoming a celebrity, you got brave around marijuana, which meant to say when I would come visit you, it wasn't hidden. It was here. The bong was sort of out like flowers in a pot in the kitchen or in a vase. And I would walk in and, you know, from the point of view of people like me, it was so freeing, because all you want to do is see that stigma start to disappear. And, you know, back in 08, when I started shooting the documentary, it was completely illegal. And a great number of people were saying, stay away from it, including you know, TV doctors like Sanjay Gupta. But here was you in New York and LA, like you'd walk in and it would, you know, here you go. And you were also one of the first people to say, look at all these different strains with the different names. And look, they come in these cylinders. And I just loved it. You probably didn't realize you were doing such a deed for your big brother, right?
Well, you know, I've never really censored. Marijuana has been in my life since I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. I actually was just in Colorado in skiing in Aspen, and the closest retail spot to my condo, I mean literally 50 yards, was a legal marijuana dispensary for recreational use, which is something I'd never seen in my life. I walked in there like a wide-eyed kid in a candy store, and the guy said, you know, was looking at me, and I said, I've been smoking marijuana since I was 14 years old. I've never purchased it legally. And he was like, well, welcome to Colorado.
He was so excited to have you.
It was really interesting. And actually, apropos of your show, I was with a friend who always has gotten anxious and paranoid from smoking marijuana and never has smoked it. He's just never found, you know, because up until this sort of deregulation, decriminalization, everyone is, you know, you just smoked whatever came your way. Mm-hmm. And so this friend, you know, never really had found it. And he said to the guy behind the counter, he said, these are all my, this is what happens to me when I smoke weed. This is what I don't like. But I know a lot of people get relaxation from it. They get anti-anxiety from it. They get pleasure from it. But I've never found that for me. And the guy sort of talked him through the whole thing. It was just like, you know, it was like, you know, ordering a sandwich at the deli counter.
And, right.
And then he found the strain that he liked. And then he was, for the first time, able to get relaxation from it and to get enjoyment out of it as a thing. And it was just, it was interesting because for the first time you could actually, like, talk to someone and, like, order what would work for you.
Exactly. The specifics of what people need and what the properties in the compound have to be matched up. And that's something we were talking about a great deal today, that specific to you is a strain that perhaps will not make you paranoid at all, perhaps will not make you hungrier than you want to be. And so it's this great matching of the specifics of a strain. And lately, there are so many strains, and the world is sort of opening up. I want to talk about L.A. for a second. And even when it was illegal, you know, as short as less than 10 years ago, everywhere and sort of lumped with cocaine and heroin, L.A. was always the okay. Like, there was Amsterdam, and then not even New York. I wouldn't say San Francisco, even, where people would say, oh, I'm sure it's flowing in the streets. But L.A. always had, and always has been to me, a planet in which you're going to look the way you want. You're going to, you know, be proud of the job you have. There's all kinds of artists. And I remember hearing someone said, you know, in L.A., you can just go buy a joint from a vending machine. And I remember thinking, come on. I know in Tokyo you can buy whiskey from a vending machine, but
I've yet to see that vending machine.
Okay, good. You live in L.A. and you haven't seen it either, so maybe it was a myth.
No, I mean, I've never seen anything like I saw in Colorado. I mean, there's medical dispensaries every block here. It is very popular in Los Angeles, but and we just as you know passed recreational marijuana, but it's not enacted yet, so. There's medical dispensaries on every other block, but it's not but yeah, I mean California culture, you know, California.
Yeah,
but and LA, yeah. LA culture. I mean, yeah, I mean it's sort of the vibe of LA. I think for a lot of people, it goes along with the vibe of marijuana.
Yeah, and I always appreciated that kind of drawing outside the line kind of vibe, because on the East Coast it felt like, well, do this, don't do this, and.
A lot of artists too,
right?
Art of creatives and artists, and marijuana has traditionally, I think, been good for creativity and artists, and so maybe that's some of it.
And you're being so open about smoking at an earlier age. What tell me in as an artist, how it plays in your life? I know you're not a major guy waking up and hitting it, and. I've been with you many times. What do you gain from it in positive ways?
Well, I should say that I also not only do I not smoke, I go in waves. I mean, it's like alcohol in that. I mean, I get more benefit from it, but you know, you go through periods of your life where you're drinking more wine than other times of your life. I go through periods of my life where I don't smoke. Like now I haven't smoked in a while.
Right.
And then I go through periods where I enjoy it. I've never been a person that smoked every day or relied on it every day. I go in and out of phases with it. But, there's times when for me, it's very relaxing. I can be an anxious person and it brings me relaxation in a natural way. And creativity, I find it very good for stimulating creativity. You can have lots of out of the box sort of ideas that, you know, sometimes are a little too wacky, you know, traditionally. But also, it give you a new perspective on something you're working on, and then of course the recreational part of it, just laughing with friends and a lot of just funny conversations and watching movies and sort of sharing things is a piece of the pleasure I get out of it.
Certainly. And because it's about the senses, your life involves music, film, friends, and laughing. I sometimes wonder if less creative people have a different kind of need, because there's a tangible difference for me when I listen to music that's subtle but important to me, and I know that people, appreciate food differently. So it's interesting that a culture like Hollywood did get on board, legally or not, early on, and to feed this beautiful thing that comes out of L.A., which is one of our major exports in America, and that is film and how music adds to that. I wanted to talk a little bit about your film, Going in Style. Can you give me... This is a brand new movie coming out in the spring. It's a remake of an old George Burns film, and you directed it in Manhattan last summer in crazy heat, August heat. You had Morgan Freeman, Alan Arkin, and Michael Caine under your wing, and they must have been sweating, right? It was August.
it's really was a challenge to do an action comedy with three 80-year-olds in Brooklyn and Manhattan in the dead of summer.
Oh, my God.
But I don't even know if you know this, but it's totally apropos of your show, that there's a medicinal marijuana scene, and they go to, because actually Manhattan is just, the five boroughs have just started to get medical dispensaries. Mm-hmm. And in our film, Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman go to visit Michael Caine's son-in-law in the film, and he owns a dispensary. And they're two guys in their 80s who've never seen anything like this. And it's a really funny scene where they're reading off all the funny strain names. and just picture Morgan Freeman going, "Oh, gee, good." and
can't wait.
And then there's a scene where they try medicinal marijuana for the first time, and which is really funny. And Michael Caine says, "Willie, I think I need to get a prescription for this." and Morgan goes, "Me too." And it's funny.
So it turns out these legendary actors, as characters, take one little hit and get very, very into it. Not surprising.
That's funny.
That's really cool.
I think you know, it's just very zeitgeisty now that as marijuana becomes more in the mainstream culture, that here are these seniors who never have seen anything like this, and then them experiencing it is funny.
There's a lot of good buzz. Are you excited to be out there representing?
I'm thrilled about it. It's my third film. I've never made something this large. My first big studio film, and
the preview. The preview looks so great. I've people calling me saying, "I just went to the movies and saw the preview," and so
yeah, the trailer's all over the place, which is a really good thing. And it happens to be, when you get trailer placement, you could end up on a movie that no one sees. But our trailer happens to be on Hidden Figures and La La Land, which are two of the most popular movies right now. So we're having a bit of luck in that way.
That's interesting. Yeah, that there's the surge, certainly for viewers that watch the Golden Globes, who are running to see these films that they haven't seen, and then they're going to get a really good taste of yours. Everybody loves Scrubs. There's nobody that I can say you're my brother and they don't say, "Oh, I loved Scrubs." And that's in the can and done. 8 years of great work. You were younger and you brought tons of energy to it. The world is still watching. Isn't it on in England and Spain? And
it's on everywhere. And what's funny about it is in this country, Netflix has done a really crazy thing with it, in that now that the people that grew up watching it are passing it down to their kids, and so it's one of the first shows. There's other examples, but it's one of the first that just keeps on going because it keeps recharging itself as people keep passing it down on Netflix.
Yes.
And now with binge watching and Netflix, it just keeps going, and it's been really fun that most shows have their life, and we had a really lucky life with it, 9 years.
Yeah.
And a huge international success with it. It really plays well all over the globe. But then in this country, it's still young kids find it once they get it's a little bit risque. So once parents let their kids watch it, it sort of keeps recharging itself.
Yeah, and then this notion of binge watching is a new thing. And I see even my kids, your niece and nephew, are like, "Yeah, I just watched six Scrubs."
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's funny. Your kids are at the age now where they discovered and their parents have handed it down to them and said, "Oh, I really liked this when I was in college," or whatever. And because it's a little, naughty at times, but also hopefully funny and silly, the kids, love it, and it just keeps on going.
Yeah, it's terrific stuff. I was just talking to Dr. Patel here, and she said, oh, I love Scrubs, and I love Garden State. So Garden State has sort of a cult following, and I'm sure you keep hearing about that. It was sort of a movie that was great for its own time. It represented young 20s in that slot so well. Of course, there's new films doing that now. Your thoughts on Garden State and how it stays so well received?
Well, I think, you know, it definitely has a really loyal cult audience that really are passionate about it. I have to say it's rare, unless I'm staying in my house, if I'm out in public, it's rare that someone doesn't say something about it to me. People are very passionate about it, and I think it just caught. It came out at the right. I don't know that it would have the same success today. It's a pretty wear your heart on your sleeve, sensitive, non-cynical film. I think in today's environment, it would be stomped on. But at the time, it was me. You know, it was so personal. It was so what I was feeling. It was really just. Really, sort of a very as personal a movie can be about what I was feeling in my mid-20s, and I think that for people that don't mind a movie that's wears its heart on its sleeve and isn't cynical and is about love and it strikes the right chord with them. Yeah. It can be polarizing though because there's people who don't like that and you know it was. But it was a huge hit for when it came out.
Yeah, there's a lot, so much good work in it. For anyone who hasn't seen Garden State, you have to check it out. The Human Condition at Work, A Lonely Boy in New York, and Zach actually got that beautiful Paul Simon and Garfunkel song. And Zach also put together a soundtrack that won a Grammy that year, beating the Ray Charles soundtrack. It was quite a year for Little Brother.
I was it Ray Charles? I think I beat Quentin Tarantino because he came up to me and you know he's one of my heroes and I had never met him before and there he is and I walk up to him and there's this you know Godhead and he goes you stole my fucking Grammy man. I was like uh oh.
Really, he had a film out. I always tell people you beat Ray Charles.
I don't remember. I have to Google it. I forgot. All I remember is that I beat Quentin Tarantino. It's very surreal.
He's a good guy to beat. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for being with us today and for being brave enough to see that something's really happening here that's sort of important in the name of medicine and keeping people off of things that are nastier and have side effects. I love you very much, and let's talk
too.
Soon. All right, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
Yep. Thanks, Zach Braff.
Bye-bye.
What an interesting episode. So many questions that I had a feeling would come up as we opened up this closet that some people are hiding in and some people are very much coming out of these days. We talked about CBDs and THC and CBN and CBTs, acronyms that are important for people who are going to be researching cannabis as medicine, and also for those who may use it recreationally, because there are so many benefits to using it recreationally for the senses from an artistic standpoint. From a standpoint of trying to get past alcohol or other prescriptions. We thank you very much for joining us on the Cannabis Corner. I thank my partner, Farmer Adam Teitelbaum, and Dr. Rachna Patel. I am your host, Joshua Braff. We will see you next time.